welcome to Monocle 24's The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. I'm Andrew Tuck. Coming up on the programme.
The first thing you think of when you picture Switzerland would be mountains, skiing, winter sports. But for me, I much prefer it as a summer destination.
This week we're in Zurich reporting from our new home in the city, Dufourstrasse 90. As we prepare to host our Quality of Life conference here, we decided to take a closer look at some of the urban challenges Zurich is facing at the moment. We unpack the city's relationship with noise and just how much is too much, and also how citizens want to rethink the access to one of the most valued commodities, Lake Zurich. Plus, transforming a neighbourhood through art, and we visit the city's only hammam too. That's all coming up over the next 30 minutes, right here on The Urbanist with me, Andrew Tuck. So welcome to this week's episode of The Urbanist. When you think about this city, one of the first things that comes to mind is the lake that proudly stands in the centre. Be it winter or summer, Lake Zurich is a core part of city living. But now there's an ongoing discussion about its role in the community. Is the lake a public good, or should it be allowed to have private access too? We sent Monocle's Marcus Hippy to find out.
When visiting Zurich for the first time, you might be surprised by the surrounding mountains and greenery. But for the veterans in this city, they know that it is the lake that makes this city, the biggest in Switzerland, so special. In the summer, Lake Zurich is the key instigator of urban transformation. City life suddenly revolves around the water, with businessmen going for a dip before that important 8 a.m. meeting, children enjoying summer holidays, or residents knocking back a chilled beer sitting by the shore. The lake becomes the city living room, inviting, comfortable and informal, as the designer Adrian Snodgrass told me. He's a special envoy to the Outdoor Swimming Society.
That's the thing. I think the first thing you think of when you picture Switzerland would be mountains, skiing, winter sports. But for me, I much prefer it as a summer destination. Funnily, having moved from an island surrounded by water and growing up by the sea, I swim here much, much, much more frequently than I do in the UK. I mean, at least every day, ideally two or three times a day if I can. There are many, many lakes. They're fresh water, they're clean. You don't have the worries that we used to have, the kind of worries that they're trying to speak out against in the Outdoor Swimming Society. When I was younger in the UK, the water was considered dirty, it was considered unclean, unsafe. There were statistics that were sort of skewed of how many people that had died. And incidentally, these statistics are really people who were standing by water, people who were playing around on a pier or a jetty, or they weren't expecting to swim. Typically, people who are going swimming aren't expecting to drown. You know, they're safe, they're prepared. They've usually told someone, they're with someone else. Whereas here in Switzerland, it's the completely opposite end of the spectrum. It seems to be culturally a little bit more of the norm, especially in Zurich. You can go on your lunch break or before work, after work, whenever, and go for a swim. It's part of life.
Now, a recent debate over who has the right to which part of the waters might change how people relate to the lake. It is fairly easy to access the lake from the city centre, but venture a bit further away and you might need to get out of your comfort zone and step over some slippery rocks. With this in mind, the association Jalt zum Seeuferweg, or Yes for the Seeufer Pathway, launched a campaign and proposal to create a footpath around the lakeshore. This would mean better access and that a new part of the city would feel more connected to this element. But it has raised questions regarding the ownership of the land around Lake Zurich. If you have a house just by the water, do you own the shore in front of you, or is it a public good? At the beginning of the month, the city's cantonal council voted to protect the land of those properties. If the footpath is to happen, the city will have to buy the land from the owners, or at least enter some sort of an agreement. But while this will only apply to land by rivers or lakes, there is still a chance it might be overthrown. It is likely that it will all be decided Swiss-style through a referendum. As Adrian explained to us, the lake is one of the most inclusive places in Zurich, where not only the communities around different areas change, but everyone can find an area that suits their needs.
And that was how I found your office. I thought, where is it from Uiteke? And that will be where I'll be heading after this for a quick swim. I think it depends what you want, but there's a body to suit everybody. All of my favourites are actually on the lake itself. Of course, there are some on the river. There are some inland with open-air pools. Personally, I like Uiteke for swimming, proper swimming. There's a good community of open-water swimmers and triathletes and people who want to cross the lake, do longer distances, 2, 3, 4 kilometres. Enge is probably my local. It would be the closest for me, but it's notoriously busy. But it's good for a quick swim if I just want to get in the water. And then if it's a family time, then Mittenkay is the spot.
While Lake Zurich remains very much public and part of the city, how to access it has caused residents to rethink how they want their city to be and to what lengths should you protect the right to a post-work swim. From Monaco, overlooking Lake Zurich, I am Markus Hippi.
Urban development in Zurich can be tricky. The regulations, paperwork, or public opposition to change can all get in the way. But that's not to say the city doesn't embrace new and exciting projects, especially when they stand to gain something themselves. After a life-changing experience on holiday in Tunisia and a decade of planning, Liz Minnison overcame these challenges to build a brand new building to house her business, while giving back to the city at the same time. Here's Bill Luthi to tell us more.
The eastern bank of Lake Zurich looks like many other areas in the city. The usual mix of large shuttered houses with typically steep alpine roofs, the occasional mismatched modern office block made from glass, steel and reinforced concrete, and plenty of trees. The streets are quiet. However, halfway up Mühlbachstrasse, an almost bunker-like building that, from the outside, gives almost nothing away. This building is Hammam Bazaar. Its founder, Liz Meinsen.
When you come from outside, you see something what you perhaps not really recognize as a hammam, because it is not in our Western architecture, it is not something what we are used to look at like this. We have a lot of glass and concrete buildings, but it's like something you discover when you open the door and you come inside. And this is very typical also for Arab houses. You never see how rich somebody is or how poor somebody is. You just see the building and you come inside and you are in an intimate room. And this is what we wish was, or my intention was, that this space is like showing it's inside when you're coming inside, and then you are well hosted and welcome and the people are taking care of you, and it is like a public room which feels like a private room.
A hammam, for those not in the know, is an Ottoman-era public bath where visitors, amongst other things, cover themselves in mineral rich clay, douse themselves in hot water, and scrub away impurities from the skin. After witnessing these incredible healing powers, Meinsen decided this was exactly the sort of thing Zurich's bankers and business people needed, and set about her hunt for the perfect location. But space in Zurich isn't easy to find, not to mention the assault course of regulations, and many of the parks are actually privately owned gardens.
I found this area at the Batuma Park, which is a historical park, which was for 80 years closed, was never part of the public room. Then initially I just wanted to build a hammam, and in fact I had to build much more. I had to build more than 30 apartments to realize the hammam, so the project was a little bit bigger. But in fact it was always the intention to make a bridge from a traditional hammam to modern architecture in Zurich.
After gaining more than 70% approval in yet another Swiss referendum, Meinsen was given the green light to build the hammam, on the condition of including apartments and reopening the beautiful Patumba Park, where it was to be built, to the public.
It's a translation. It's really a translation, because we tried to make a really authentic hammam which really respects the way of architecture, because in Arab architectures you associate a lot of decorations, a lot of colors, a lot of patterns. We just didn't want to integrate into the architecture and not in the interior design.
The building itself, designed by Miller and Maranta of Basel, is made almost exclusively of concrete, completely smooth, apart from lots of tiny holes where windows would usually be. This, Meinsen says, keeps the building private while allowing those on the inside to experience the tranquility of the park on the outside. But the vibe in Zurich is worlds apart from that of, say, Istanbul. So how do you keep up the tradition while still attracting the orderly Swiss?
If you look at the building from outside, it's introverted building. You see from inside outside, but you don't look from outside inside.
The blurring of boundaries between public and private can often create issues for people trying to make use of those spaces. But in the case of Hammam Bazaar, the bridge between the two allows everyone to make the most of the area. The Hammam has the much-needed custom-built building, and the locals reclaim the rest. Although we often criticise private developers, here's proof that, if well intentioned, the results can be beneficial for all.
Thanks, Bill. A report there by our very own Bill Duty. You're listening to The Urbanist on Monocle 24. I'm Andrew Tuck, and this week we're reporting from our brand new office in Zurich's Dufourstrasse 90. Now, the city has a touch-and-go relationship with noise. Earlier this month, two residents of Langstrasse won a case in the federal court against the noise levels in the nightlife district, raising questions over the consequences it might have on bar and club operators. But now, with the city in full World Cup mood, the police have announced that it will tolerate 1 hour of car horns after all football matches, so fans can either celebrate or commiserate together. Monocle's Carlotta Ribello investigates the city's relationship with noise.
For city dwellers, the hustle and bustle is surely part of the appeal of living in an urban centre. Cities are active beings and demand that we, as residents, give in with tolerating a couple of things. Constant traffic, living with a less than ideal air quality, and most importantly, learn to live with noise. Noise pollution has become a much bigger concern recently, and with reason. Studies estimate that most city residents will experience hearing loss in their early life. According to the World Health Organization, the sound of an emergency siren is usually at the level of 120 decibels, a level that corresponds to the threshold of human pain. So how should cities react to this? Fines and restrictions could do the trick, but it will surely impact quality of life. And what about planners? Could they reimagine the way cities are designed? Earlier this month, two residents of Zurich's famous nightclub street, Langstrasse, successfully won a case seeking for a noise reduction level to be imposed in the area. It has made residents question what sort of city they want to live in and caused concern with the business community about the future of their work. To get a bit of context on the issue of noise in Zurich, I caught up with Mark Dittley, who's the editor-in-chief of the Republic magazine.
Zurich used to be a very dull city until the mid-90s. Zurich was very Protestant, rather dull. Bars were only allowed to be open until midnight. No bars, very few clubs, very little partying. And then it started to change. And, you know, over those past 25 years or so, Zurich has become a very lively, very open, very tolerant party city. Bars are mostly allowed to be open as long as they want. There are clubs popping up everywhere. There are a lot of pop-up locations that open for a few weeks and then they move on. The change within those past 25, 30 years maybe has been quite dramatic, from dull and boring to one of the most lively cities in Europe, in continental Europe at least. So the relationship of Zurich people with noise kind of had to evolve along those lines as well. The area that you mentioned, Langstrasse, it actually used to be a very seedy red light district. There was, you know, open prostitution, a few seedy bars, but not really the place where people wanted to live and not really the place where people went to party. And that changed in the 90s as well. Now, today, Langstrasse is the party mile of Zurich. Lots of clubs, lots of bars, lots of cafes, lots of great restaurants, and so on. And I think what we have is, over those past 25 years, the entire district, district number 4 of Zurich, started to become attractive for people to live in, too. I used to live there in the early years of this century, in 2001, 2002. It was mainly a district where immigrants lived, young people with no children, and as soon as they had children, they moved out to other districts. It has gentrified, and we know the pattern from many other cities. Gentrification takes hold. Young urban professionals want to live there. They start to stay there once they have kids. They settle, and so on. And what you have suddenly is, it's cool to live in that district. And at first you find it fun with all the party and, you know, all the noise that goes with it. And as gentrification moves along, suddenly people become more settled and kind of fall back into a duller way of life. They grow older and suddenly they find it not so fun anymore that it's so noisy. But instead of moving out to a quieter district, they want to stay and they start to protest against the noise.
And this is not just the case for Zurich. It does apply to Switzerland as a whole. Here's Mark again.
The Swiss people have a very peculiar relationship with noise. So not only in Zurich, all over Switzerland, you have just a substantial amount of people who want to live in quiet and reduce any levels of noise. People that live around the airport of Zurich, there's, you know, always protests against the noise of the airplanes. There's protests against noise of cars and pretty much everywhere.
But if on one hand residents are seeking restrictions, in the other they are looking out for exceptions. Just before the kickoff of the World Cup 2018, the Council of Cantons of Zurich approved a motion to allow residents to celebrate after each match for the period of 1 hour. That celebration involves anything from car honking to chanting down the streets. It does all sound very Swiss with a time restriction, but do people actually respect the 60-minute time frame?
Actually, I think it was more headline than anything else. I personally haven't seen it really being enforced. When Switzerland wins a match, in the Langstrasse area, the party goes on all night. And the honking of car horns, it goes on for I don't know how long. Mind you, this is not only an issue about Swiss football matches. There's a big Portuguese community in Zurich. There's a big Spanish community in Zurich. And there are many Croatians. There are many Brazilians and so on. So basically, very many matches have the potential that there'll be a lot of partying afterwards and a lot of horn honking.
Whether you're complaining you live on a party street or are chanting that your team has won and celebrating, living with noise is an intrinsic part of living in a city. And in the case of Zurich, it seems it's not going anywhere anytime soon. For Monocle in Zurich, I'm Carlotta Ribello.
Before we head off, we're going to the north of the city to explore how a new public art project has delivered fresh life to a neighbourhood there called Neue Norden Zürich, or New North Zürich. It wants to put the northern districts on the map and make them more attractive for cultural institutions too. Here's Monocle's Carlo Silberschmidt.
We are here in Zürich Oerlikon. That's a neighbourhood which used to be known as a site where we had concerts, sports events and theatres, so it's a little at the northern periphery of the city of Zurich, between downtown and the airport. Well known as a site where people did spend their time. Now it's transformed, it's under huge construction and we are just in front of the velodrome where we installed only a couple of weeks ago a fantastic sculpture from Peter Fischli and David Weiss, the Swiss very well-known famous artists and who were spending many, many years of their career here in Zurich and who were reflecting a lot on their surrounding, their contexts.
We're standing in Oerlikon in front of an art piece you've selected. Which art piece have you selected to show me?
It is called House. It was created by Fischli Weiss already in 1986 for the sculpture project in Münster, but it was then destroyed because it was made out of wood and some ephemeral materials which wouldn't have survived. But the idea was always from the artist to create a more sustainable sculpture out of it. Now it's done from plexiglass and aluminium cast. It's a 1-to-5 scaled office or industry building from the 50s, completely anonymous architecture, so no signature architecture, is very important for Fischli Weiss, as they were interested in very everyday aesthetics, so-called. So they went to visit the outskirts of city, where they found some absolutely normal street view situations. They photographed and published a book out of it, or they cast it from polyurethane, they cast it some everyday instruments like a hammer or a nail or a bucket. So they worked in all their artistic career with everyday aesthetics, and house is one of the masterpieces of their production, and I'm very happy and proud to have it here installed permanent in Zurich's north, in surrounded by signature architect, so-called. And that's was very interesting, as Peter Fischli and me were researching the perfect site. We were trying to figure out where could it be best. And here, I think it's a perfect situation because it's surrounded by signature architecture. The Velodrome is a heritage monument of Swiss concrete architecture. The Hallenstadion is under protection too. The Theatre 11 too. And here stands that very normal 1-to-5 scaled industrial building, and is really creating and provoking strange reactions of people who were just giving it a second view, asking themselves, what is this? Is it Swiss miniature in Melide transformed, transported to Zurich, Switzerland, or what is it? And I think that is very crucial when it comes to public art, that people doesn't just walk by and say, oh, it's art, but that they stop, that they give it a second sight and view, and then they start to think and reflect about their own urban surrounding.
So indeed, we're standing in front of this art piece by Fischli Weiss. Give me a little description of what we can see here.
It is, a matter of fact, the model of a factory, or, well, it's not a business building as what we understand now, but it's a business building from the 50s. Let's say it like that. That means it has no specific aesthetic in terms of, it's not what we call today a signature architecture. It is a completely anonymous building from the 50s, and that's what it makes it so interesting, as it's referring to a time when architecture was completely functional, had not a signatureship like today when we experience architecture as completely individualized, you know. So it is a reference to a time which is the past of this northern neighborhood in Zurich, and which is also the past of this neighborhood, because everything is renovated or destroyed and rebuilt. So what we see now here in Zurich, but also elsewhere in Europe and worldwide, is the complete transformation of our cities, of our neighborhoods. This house, officially wise, is sort of like a monument which refers to our past.
So this house is part of the project Neuer Norden, or New North Zurich, as it would be translated. Tell me more about this project.
First of all, New North Zurich is in a line with older exhibitions we realized here in Zurich already in 2012. That was Art and the City, and 2015 we had Art Altstetten Albisrieden. These older projects were also in peripheral neighborhoods of the city, because we want to discuss the transformation of our surroundings, of our neighborhoods, and we do that with arts. We invite artists to create new projects discussing that transformation in many facets, in many ways. House is one of these facets. The New North is referring to that highway leading from downtown Zurich to the airport, which has been constructed in the 70s, separating a residential area like a Berlin Wall, and having a strong impact on everyday life of the population of that northern neighborhood. Now this cut of the neighborhood is being sort of medicated with a high line, with a park covering the highway and transforming the whole neighborhood again. So it is like a surgery, you know, so medically spoken, this surgery is going to transform the neighborhood completely again.
So how many art pieces do we have in total?
We have 41 art pieces from artists from all over the world. Many of them did specifically commissioned work. They came to visit Schwammendingen, Oerlikon and Seebachau, the neighborhoods are called here in Zurich. They did in-deep research on what's happening here, on local history sometimes, but many of them were also dealing with architecture, with traffic, with mobility, with the transformation of industries and economy, so all sorts of aspects of our urban lifestyles.
And what were the reactions of the residents, of people who have been living here for a really long time, and now we have these art installations popping up?
In the beginning we were kind of naive, so we just were starting our project as it were an institutional project in a museum or in an art gallery. We experienced some difficult situations, I have to say. But with the years and with our more elaborated experience, we learned that we have to start the projects on a communication level much earlier. So my job is not only the job of a curator, but I go and see people from the neighborhoods already 2 or 3 years in advance. So I do presentations, I do conferences, I meet stake and shareholders here, and I try to convince them to firstly to contribute to the exhibition and to give us information about some local topics we wouldn't discover by ourselves, and that's very helpful. For example, we have here a fantastic little exhibition about a guy who used to run an opera house in Schwammendingen for 40 years in his 3-room apartment, you know, and he's a completely outstanding outside artist, you know, and nobody knows him. So without the information from the local population, from the locals, we wouldn't be able to do that. So that's one thing. But the other thing is also they start to support us economically, you know. So we have some projects which are co-funded by the locals here, and that's very important. It shows you that this art program is not an elitistic art program, but it's very elitistic when it comes to the artists, because we have very contemporary positions here which are in the international discourse, but on the other hand, they are integrated in a very popular mediation program and in a very popular also information politics. We do, for example, collaborate with the local newspaper. We did 2 supplements with the local newspaper which were distributed for free, so that helps us also to establish an ongoing communication with the population.
And presence, I imagine. So what's your long-term vision for this project? Will it develop will it grow further to other districts, or will it remain in the city of Zurich?
I mean, the city of Zurich has its limits, that's right, but it's growing in these limits, and perspectives are still very positive. So what we think and what we deal now is the south of the city. That's the neighborhood of Leimbach and Wollishofen, where we see now a transformation of a perimeter into the so-called green city. So sustainability will be a topic there, a specific topic. Of course, we do our everyday work. The exhibitions are the top of the iceberg, but 90% of our work is very down to earth, is very basic, is dialogue with people, is renovating destroyed artworks, is cleaning them up, is doing informations. And these basics, I think they are very sustainable, because we are able to interest the population for art on one side, but also for their own living space, for their own neighborhood itself. And I think that's the second value we create with that the Zurich population in the city itself is visiting different neighborhoods, is going to see sites where they've never been before. And that's a feedback I very often experience, that people comes to me and say, hey, Christoph, you know, you showed me corners of Zurich I've never been before.
And that's all for this week's episode of The Urbanist. The show has been produced here in Zurich by Carlotta Rabello and edited by David Stevens, who's here too. To play you out of this episode of The Urbanist, here's Gorillaz with Lake Zurich. Thank you for listening, city lovers.